Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. That time of the week again, where you get to be a little bit more comprehensive about your health. Not a show, as those of you who have listened in the past know, not a show where you just listen to what supplement causes a cure or topical explanations about diseases. It's a show where you got to think. And today we're going to discuss Alzheimer's, and if you've got any of your mind left, and hopefully you do, many don't after the age of 60, then you're going to apply that wonderful mind of yours to understanding deeper concepts about Alzheimer's. I did a show last week about Parkinson's, and I really want to talk about Alzheimer's, Parkinson's from the standpoint of neurodegenerative disease. So I think it's superfluous for people to understand Parkinson's versus Alzheimer's versus Kuru versus Jacob Creutzfeldt's disease versus premature senility. There's a whole host of neurodegenerative problems that all involve a similar process. And if you look at it that way, then no matter what your genetic slant is, you'll nip it in the bud. You see, that's the real danger here of pointing to science has just discovered the Alzheimer's genes and you're predisposed. Science has just discovered the Parkinson's genes and you're predisposed. The real faux pas there, the real mistake for the American public is that once it's looked at that way, it overlooks an underlying phenomenon. And that is, before you get Alzheimer's, genetic predisposition included, before you get Parkinson's, before you get a brain tumor, before you get some sort of senility condition, your cells were all degrading and degenerating in the same way. So today's show, you've got to deepen your understanding of what we mean by inflammation. Inflammation, whether it's from stress, inflammation, whether it's from gluten, inflammation, whether it's essential fatty acid deficiency, inflammation, whether it's what? Heavy metal exposure, pesticide exposure, anterior head carriage, torquing the midbrain. These are all going to lay down the wrong tracks for an inflammatory evolution to your neurons, your glial cells, your brain cells. And long before you ignite your specific genetic defect, you could nip these things in the bud if you thought that way. But what they've got you on is a blind goose chase in a labyrinth when they talk to you about this is what Parkinson's is caused by, and this is what Alzheimer's is caused by, and this is what just regular old age senility is caused by, and they're sending you off. The authorities, the literature, nutrition. What are we doing here? Making a claim that we should treat you different for Alzheimer's as from Parkinson's, as from just age-old senility? Here's the biggest misconception about Alzheimer's. It's called a disease of the old. And that implies that people 200 years ago were getting it, just as people today are getting it. And the only reason there's more of it is because people 200 years ago weren't living as long. And studies show that. Studies show that people 200 years ago, even people 100 years ago, were not living as long because modern medicine has cured all these terrible, terrible plagues. And so now we're all just left with cancer and Alzheimer's and a few other conditions that are only really being observed as increasing percentage-wise in older populations because you're living that long. This is an absolute crock. Now, here's the proof. I'm going to give you a perspective here. As always, get to the website, straighttalk.cc, 2Ts, not.com.cc. If you're driving, I'll do the best I can. When you get home, when you get a free moment, get to the website. Can't get you to the deeper level. Don't drink the Kool-Aid. You don't cure Alzheimer's with an herb, and you don't want to take their allopathic solutions. You don't want to listen to the misconceptions about neurodegenerative disease, and they're everywhere. On the website, click to the full article on the top called The Longevity Skeptic. And I put this full article in here for you to take a look at. We're just going to browse today more deeply on your own. I numbered the pages up in the other right-hand corner. The Longevity Myth. This is one of dozens of articles like this. This isn't the first one. The Longevity Myth. Are we really living longer? Or is the head weight mostly hype? Now, there's page one. I just want you to come down here, and I'm just going to review some of the salient points so you really understand why they're saying we're living longer and we're not. Go to the bottom there of page one. I put it in parentheses. First page, page one, numbers are in the upper right-hand corner. Last paragraph, when the media and general public make causal use of the phrase life expectancy, they intend it as shorthand for life expectancy at birth. And then just come on down a little bit. However, this is the last line in that paragraph. This hardly implies that a given man who reaches the age of 75 should spend his birthday shopping for caskets. In actuary terms, a man who attains that milestone today still has a life expectancy of an additional 10 years. So understand that. If we say men are going to live to the age of 75, and because our life expectancy is 75, a man that lives to 75 then, if we're interpreting life expectancy as, well, you're 75, go out and buy a casket, we're misunderstanding what life expectancy means. Life expectancy does not mean that if you're 75, since that's the birth life expectancy, you're ready to die. It simply means if we throw in all the plagues, the pestilences, the genocides, the diseases we can't cure that are ravaging us, if we throw all of those in, we add them all up, and we look at how long then people live, we can give them a birth life expectancy. And that birth life expectancy at 1900 was lower than it is today. Now, what's the reason for that? The reason 200 years ago life expectancy was lower is because of the plagues. And you can make an argument that modern medicine has cured those. And bravo for modern medicine. I'm not going to discuss that too much today. But you have to understand the statistic. When you're hearing in 1900 or 1800, life expectancy was 40 or 50 years old for your average male, this is because of five big problems. And female. So I'll include the two for the female. One was death during birth. Maternal mortality until the 1930s was very high. Number two, you have the issue of infant mortality. Infants in China at the turn of the century, 9 out of 10 Chinese babies died within the first year. Poor hygiene, sanitation, overcrowding, not having basic medical care. Tuberculosis because of poor hygiene. Diabetes, pneumonia. Again, people were malnourished. Again, people didn't understand hygiene. Again, people didn't get basic medical care. So if you look at pneumonia, tuberculosis, infant mortality, maternal mortality, and then we add some of the plagues, the Spanish flu, taking out 1 out of 4 people in Europe. The smallpox epidemics, the polio epidemics, When you put them all together collectively, it's going to bring down life expectancy. And when you compare that to today, what you of course find is that we're living longer. Now, if you went back to 1900, if you went back there and you walked up to all the people at the age of 70 and you looked at their health and then you tracked them until they died, they're living at least as long, if not longer. And that's not consistent, then we're living longer today. And this is the point. We've got a hype and a misconception statistically when we say statistics show that life expectancy today is much longer than it was. And because it's much longer, everybody's expressing for cancer. They're expressing for Alzheimer's. That's a statistical slant. And to understand the difference between reality, I give you this article. So look at this article by yourself. Very important. Read and understand this. Now, on that basis, then, in what way have we extended life expectancy? Well, not really any. Next, you have an issue. You have an issue with oxidative stress. The amount of oxidative stress the average person is exposed to today. And again, oxidative stress, those neurons, those cells up in your brain being exposed to an infinitely higher percentage of heavy metals, of petrochemicals, of pesticides, of carcinogens we haven't even identified. The sum total of chemicals compared to 100 years ago has increased, on top of which the fertility in the soil, the fertility in food has decreased intensely. And this, if you look at the neuron, offsets the balance then between the stresses to the cells and the body's ability to repair under the stress. So if we want to understand Alzheimer's today, rather than something that's occurring simply because people are living longer, and want an answer as to why more people get it from the age of 70, it's that if you look at your average 70-year-old today, the level of oxidative stress, the level of the number of hits to those neurons, which we're going to look to in a second, from all angles, not just from what we're going to talk about today, from diabetes, from blood sugar, say, but from all hits, the cell, the neuron, can't find the countermeasure to these stresses. And when that begins to happen, the body's inflammatory response sets in, and we start laying down different types of plaques. And whether we're talking about Alzheimer's, or we're talking about Parkinson's, or we're talking about Kuru, or Jacob Creutzfeldt disease, or whether we're talking about dementia, you're talking about different responses to very fundamental levels of oxidative stress. Now, your gene may code you for a particular response, but long before we get there, we have to consider what the more fundamental driver is. Let's take a look at Alzheimer's. Go to picture number one. Picture number one. That's a neuron in Alzheimer's disease. And that's a normal neuron on the left, a non-diseased neuron. Now remember, you've got umpteen trillions of neurons in the human brain. Those neurons are conducting light. They're taking minerals in, and they're taking sugar, which we'll get to later. They're putting it into their specific cellular process, and they're flashing pulses of light down their axons. So if you look at that picture, picture number one, and you see those long, sort of like elliptical orange-yellow lines there, that's the axon. That's the fatty sheath that conducts the electrical pulse from the neuron in the brain. And you've got billions upon billions of these in the average human brain, all talking to each other in ways we don't understand. So that brain, being the sugar hog that it is, hits a point where it can't conduct its impulse. It can't conduct its impulse because it's starting to suffer from the deposition of plaque. In this case, in the case of Alzheimer's, if you look at the picture on the right, whether it's an amyloid plaque or whether it's these what we call neurofibrillary tangles, those snake-like things around the nerve cell. When you add up the amyloid plaque to those snake-like fibrillary tangles around the nerve cell, you begin to stutter or block, impede the transmission of that electrical signal. Now, this is the beginning. Now, the cell, the brain cell knows something's wrong. The brain cell, if you watch it, it starts to go into DEFCON 5 intervention phases. It starts to respond to an alert crisis because it's being told by its own cellular intelligence that it can't transmit. And what that signals finally, and this is across the board in all disease, not just Alzheimer's, once it signals finally an apoptotic response, the cells begin to commit suicide. So understand this about Alzheimer's then. Your average 70-year-old today, not because that 70-year-old has aged, but because that 70-year-old has hit critical mass in the buildup of all these different factors, we'll get to a little later, from heavy metals to pesticides, everything that you would put under the dome of bad for the health of the body, from structural compromise to emotional compromise to chemical compromise, your average 70-year-old has hit the point where the free radical damage to the neuron has started to force a response. Now, we can call that, under one big dome, a adaptive response. We can call it specific to Alzheimer's, the deposition of these neurofibrillary tangles. In Parkinson's, you can call it the beginning of a specific part under the greatest amount of chemical stress that ends up at the same place, apoptotic. That word, apoptosis, I mentioned so often on this show. Whether we're dealing with apoptosis in Alzheimer's or apoptosis in Parkinson's or apoptosis in senility, adult onset senility, or apoptosis from an infectious disease that's eating the brain, it's the same thing. We take the number of stresses against the body's ability to repair, and we cross a line. And once that line is crossed, the whole argument goes on another level. Now the cell has been alerted. And think of it like a swarm of bees. It's been alerted like a swarm of bees to a whole other level of defense. And that's when the cell starts sending messages from cell to cell to cell to commit suicide. So you can have in the forest a lot of little fires. That's the first part and the first stage. But once those fires combine, as anybody that understands fire or putting out fire will tell you, a large fire is a whole other organism. Once you coalesce a bunch of apoptotic cells that are all talking to each other chemically, signaling we have a problem, let's disappear, to what others say is to prevent malignancy, literally apoptosis. Remember, apoptosis, senescence, and malignancy. A cell can become not a danger, but it can just become useless. We call that senescence. A cell can become malignant, thus malignancy, thus cancer. Apoptosis is understood as the step before malignancy. It's an alternative. It's the cell trying to say, I don't want to go malignant, so I'm going to disappear. And word goes out like a bonfire spreads. And that's a whole other level. And when you compare that, when you compare what we just painted here So simply, you've got a genetic slant and we're living longer, and so you get it. You can see where the shortcoming is. That is an extremely myopic perception of how people get sick. So Alzheimer's, too much stress, oxidatively, meaning free radical species that are oxygen-driven, looking to pull chunks of good, healthy brain tissue apart to satisfy themselves. And long-term, we start to interfere to the point where we develop a DEFCON 5 response by the cell, alert status, and we begin an apoptotic sequence, which takes it to a whole other level. All right, now that's the base. That's the base for all neurodegenerative disease. And one of the things I want to give to you today, the concepts, the perspectives I want to give to you today, is to understand that when we break these down into individual problems, then we start to lose real focus on what you can do about them long before, and what you can do about them even when you start going down that road. And this is the point. On that basis, in other words, if you're in an early stage of Alzheimer's, do not think, because the statistics tell you you can't do something about it, that you should be left hopeless. Turn to picture article number three. Article number three. So the third one down, just below longevity skeptic. This is out of Johns Hopkins. This is called You Can't Keep a Good Cell Down. This is about a word called blebs, B-L-E-B-S. B-L-E-B-S. And just take it at word that a bleb, when we look at a bleb in a cell, it's this pouch. It pops up out of the cell. So instead of the membrane being round, there's like a little push out of it. And it's an indication that the cell is starting to signal the beginning of apoptosis. If you look at a cell with a lot of blebs, you know that whatever organ you're looking at, in this case the brain, has gotten to the point where the cellular intelligence has responded to enough gnarly-looking environments around it and decided it might be time to bail. That's what the bleb represents. And with these researches at Johns Hopkins, we're finding, and I'll bring it to exactly, we're on the first page, very simple, not the first bunch of parentheses, but the second one down. So that first page, just about a quarter of the way down. And I put it in parentheses with asterisks. When apoptosis was first described long ago, Montel explains, researchers explained it as a series that cells undergo, including the cell's edges developing irregular bulges called blebs. More recently, Gene has shown that certain proteins appear and others disappear when cells are dying. But even these, it's been unclear whether the cell death is irreversible. There's clearly at some point when this is truly dead. And so what they're pointing out is that studying these cells with these bulges on the outsides, these blebs, we know that there's a point at which the cell is, for as far as research is concerned, a point at which the cell is dead. And that practically speaking, it doesn't come back. The reason they wrote this article is because there is this huge difference between seeing the early stage of something and the late stage of something. And that's their point. And what that moment is not quite clear. Now, this is a massive, massive ray of hope to people who are in the early stages. And I will guarantee you that as we study this more, science is going to show us, and I bring those articles regularly on my show, science is going to show us that the stem cells latent inside these tissues, regardless of what organ you're talking about, if they're stimulated, you will begin to regenerate. Even before you need to actually grow new cells. This article is telling you that you just can't look at a cell with blebs and the early stages of an apoptotic response, even if it's systemic, and write that cell off, because at the bottom of this page, it says you can watch an individual cell shrivel up. So just look at the bottom of that page one, like it has no chance, and then come back to life. The findings held true for a variety of cell types, Montel adds, so on and so forth. Read the article on your own. The point of it is this, that you begin on this day to understand whether you're talking about cancer, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, you have to get off this notion of, what do I do for Parkinson's? Oh, that's for Alzheimer's. I don't have Alzheimer's. Oh, I have cancer. I don't have Parkinson's. I don't have Alzheimer's. Oh, I'm just old age senile and losing it. I don't need to know what goes on with Parkinson's. This is where you fail. And if there's one point I'm trying to drive home today, it's exactly this. But you got to understand the way the medical model works. The medical model has jumped from how we cure to how we define illness, how we micro-dot the process down, and how we study a chemical pathogenesis and insert just the right drug to stop some known toxic product in a sequence or a mechanisms. Can you get part of that? Can you get that? Because if you can, then you're not the person today that said, gee, I don't have Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. I'm only 40 years old, and I know I'm not going to get that. My issues with cancer, my issues with my back, my issues, my IBS. Can you understand that health, the study of health, is the study of a science that looks what happens before things are in the full-blown, fulminant disease state? And really, it's beyond that. But we're not going to do that in this show. Then it gets really complicated. So let's go back. Let's put it in again. Alzheimer's is a disease of the old. No, it's not. It's a disease of the old today. It's increased dramatically, as has Parkinson's, in the last 50 years. Since the turn of the century. Yes, Alzheimer's has become the new disease of the old. Conclusion? We're just living longer today because of the marvels of medicine. Wrong. Conclusion? If you look at the data, your average 75-year-old person today is not nearly as healthy as your average 75-year-old 200 years ago. Take that statement to the bank. Can you get that? The average 75-year-old today, the average 70-year-old today, has suffered the burdens of so much oxidative free radical stress that their neurons, their brain cells, have begun to succumb. They can't counterbalance. And we'll talk about how we measure and how we counterbalance later. But they just can't keep up with the onslaught. So the body shifts into a stage one pro-inflammatory response. And we begin to see plaquing. Now, whether it's the plaquing of Alzheimer's or the plaquing of Parkinson's or the plaquing of senility, it really doesn't matter for this show. You know what it matters for? To tell you you have Alzheimer's and not Parkinson's, and Parkinson's and not cancer. But it all comes down to the same thing. Your brain gets shriveled or crushed or it dissolves. You lose. Life's not worth living. It comes down to the same thing. Once you start to get progressed along that line to a certain point, the cell goes into another phase, apoptosis, or cancer, or senescence. In this case, the apoptotic response then starts to cause death of cell. And that death of cell, unimpeded, no right action taken, the person, even in the early stages of it, simply being told, there's nothing you can do but manage it, that goes home and sits on his duff or the TV, the couch, and just gets depressed and sits there and says, my time is up, is foregoing. They are foregoing that early phase before the fire has coalesced to the point where it can't be put out. Now, you might think this is self-evident. It's not. It is not self-evident. One of the things you have to wrap your mind around with this kind of a presentation is it's not giving you the simplistic solution, and that's what we want. We have an American public that we have trained for simplistic solutions. What is it? Find it, kill it. There you go. What is it? Diagnose it, drug it. There you go. What is it? Find it, diagnose it, now cut it out. We've got three solutions. Cut it out, drug it, and get depressed and manage it. And those are our solutions. That's what we do. We don't cure anything. What have we cured? What have we cured? I'll show you in the, even when we talk about something like smallpox, even when we talk about something like pneumonia, even when we talk about something like polio, if you study the stats on it, by the time we had solutions for it, those epidemics had almost vanished. If you go back into that article, we're not going to do it because of time limitations today, but if you even go back to that article, the longevity myth, it'll point out those stats are not arguable, that by the time we were mass producing antibiotics, tuberculosis and pneumonia, they were already disappearing. Why? Basic medical care, basic medical care, basic sanitation, basic hygiene, a basic level of education. Things come and go. They course through and they disappear. What have we done to slow down AIDS? Think about that. AIDS. The AIDS epidemic of the early 80s. Remember? Remember how we all sat paralyzed to it? What have we done for it? Or has it sort of just disappeared because we figured out how to have better hygiene practices? People are more careful about sexual transmission, sexual contact. There's an example. It's not about the show today. But you got to understand that this notion that the antibiotics cured it, that all these advances in medicines cured it, yes, traumatic medicine, definitely. But when you're looking at infectious disease and some of these chronic degenerative conditions, you really have to think twice. So there's this notion that you're in the early stages of it and you've got no hope other than manage it or cut it out or drug it. There it is. You can watch an individual cell shrivel up. This is not taken out of context. Go in and look at this article. This article is free on Google. Go in and take a look at it yourself. There's many examples of this. I've posted them to my show. Okay. Let's keep going. Let's take a look at the basic anatomy of the brain. We're going to start to talk about solutions. Okay? Let's talk about the basic anatomy of the brain. Let's take a look at picture number three. Actually, picture number two. If you're new to the show, straighttalk.cc. Get on the website, straighttalk.cc. Go to the literature section. Go to shows, and it'll take you right to this picture. Picture number two. Look at that. Now, that's the ventricular system of the brain. Those ventricles in Alzheimer's expand. I'm going to make you guys a wonderful offer today, a case of hydrochloric acid on me, if you can tell me why those ventricles expand. Ventricles, and I'll give you about 15 minutes. Don't call in. Put your comments on the website, straighttalk.cc. Your name will be there. If you give consent, I'll announce your name next week. A case of hydrochloric acid. To tell me why, in Alzheimer's disease, the ventricles enlarge. take a look at this. Take a look. I didn't put it on. Oh, I just didn't get that one on. You're going to have to imagine it then. The ventricles in Alzheimer's, the picture you're looking at, picture number two, those ventricles enlarge 2 to 3 times. They blow out. So the brain shrinks and the ventricles enlarge. If you look at picture number, if you look at picture number eight, the brain on the right is a normal human brain. The brain on the left is one ravaged by Alzheimer's. That brain is shrunk. As the brain shrinks, the ventricles enlarge. Now, those ventricles do what? Those ventricles pump cerebrospinal fluid. If you look at picture number three, that's a sagittal cut of the human brain. The red in the center is the choroid process. That choroid process, plexus, the choroid plexus, it takes blood. That blood is distilled into water, the milk of the brain. That water goes around the brain, around the spinal cord, and in between the cells of the brain. The cerebral spinal fluid is the milk of the brain. The cerebral spinal fluid is the intercellular blood. It's the intercellular water. It's how the brain cleans itself. It's how all those petrochemicals and viruses and funguses and heavy metals, it's where they live. Before they get to your neurons, the milk of the brain, the cerebral spinal fluid, is filled with it. Now, you can move that cerebral spinal fluid. We're going to do a class tomorrow. By the way, I've got 2 more spaces left. 2 potentially good students. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. Tomorrow, I'm going to show my class how to bend the spine into contortions. I'll do it using myself as an example to pump cerebral spinal fluid because you can feel it. You can feel your ventricular system. You can push cerebral spinal fluid through the spine. You can enhance its flow. Any inquiry into the cranial rhythms of the brain will tell you that the flow of CSF, but that cerebral spinal fluid, that's what cleans these potent neurotoxins out long before you break your cells down. These ventricles are pushing cerebral spinal fluid in between each cell of the brain to clean them. Now you tell me. You get on the website, straighttalk.cc, for a case of hydrochloric acid, my gift to you, so that I know I have some thinkers out there. Tell me why those ventricles, as you increasingly evolve into the downside of Alzheimer's disease, why those ventricles enhance. You tell me. I'm going to tell you before the show is over, but you figure it out. All right, there's a little bit about how the brain is working with Alzheimer's. Take a look at this picture. Fantastic picture here under the electron microscope. Picture number 12. There you go. All those lines are the axons. Those lines are what is transmitting the electrical impulse. And that bigger blue thing, not those little white things, those white things are those plaques of sorts. Those white things are those amyloid deposits. That space, what is that space in between all of those axons and all of those neuron cell bodies? Is the space in between what you're looking at empty? Is it air? If this is the inside of the brain, is that space air? that space, those spaces outside those tubes, those spaces outside those white deposits, this is picture number 12, those spaces are filled with cerebral spinal fluid. This is not inside a brain cell. You're looking at millions and millions of axons. Doesn't it look like Cerebro from X-Men? See the next X-Men coming out. Remember that thing, Cerebro? That the head scientist there, played by Patrick Stewart, right? He invents Cerebro, this device to contact other mutants. This looks like an extrapolation out of Cerebro. But this is the inside of your brain. This is what's between your cells. These are the axons going from cell to cell to cell. The point is that space, what looks like that space, what looks like that space is filled with cerebrospinal fluid. And that cerebrospinal fluid is filled with garbage. It's precipitating. There's a word, huh? It's precipitating out of its solution those white plaques. Those are amyloid plaques. I don't know if it's showing you the neurofibrillary tangles. Actually, not sure if that's the tangles or the plaques. Actually, I may have made a mistake. That might be the tangles, because the plaques are inside the neuron cell bodies. Either way, what ravages you in Alzheimer's is in those white depositions. Those things evolve out of that white fluid that you're not seeing. But that's where it is. Now, that fluid's supposed to be moving. What do you think happens if that fluid moves? What do you think happens if that fluid can't move? What do you think happens if the plaques, if those neurofibrillary tangles block the flow of that fluid? I'll leave that for you to think about. Take a look at picture 14. The most popular mechanisms advanced as the cause of Alzheimer's disease. Here we go once again. This is where we spend our time. This is not where we're supposed to spend our time. We spend our time on the assumption that if we understand the top six or seven mechanisms, we can take research money to stop those mechanisms, to somehow study them, to study their pathogenesis, and to interfere with it. If we just interfere with one sequence in the buildup of those plaques, one will win the Nobel Prize, two will stop the disease, and three, we can do it by engineering something that'll go in and chemically insert itself into these sequences. And we have a bunch of choices because there's a bunch of mechanisms. The most popular mechanisms advanced as the cause of Alzheimer's disease. This is where people are blind. This is where your scientists are blind. This is why we don't get cures. What are we curing? Ask yourself what we are curing. And ask yourself why. You can listen to this show, tell your friends about this show. And then when it comes and it hits you, you want to know what to do about your Parkinson's. You want to know what to do about your Alzheimer's. You want to know what to do about your cancer. The minute you get scared, you choke. Don't do that. You're better than that. You told your friends about the show? Have you done that? Have you noticed some people, they can't listen to the show? This is a show for somebody that wants it straight on. It's why I call it Straight Talk. This is a show for somebody that wants to cure themselves by employing the mechanisms in the body that science tells you are there. This is a show that asks you to reach a little deeper than an herb, that asks you to reach deeper than a drug, because it asks you to understand there's a philosophy, there's a theology, there is a perspective. There is a call here to advance your own understanding of science and how to deploy it to save you from the ravages of bad disease. You have to think. Are you a thinking individual or are you a sheep? Look at this. The most popular mechanisms. Loss of neurons that make up and release the neurotransmitter acetylcholine. the so-called cholinergic neurons. There are these chemicals that are secreted at the end of each neuron, and they help transmit the electrical impulse. Up in the brain there, acetylcholine, if there's a deficit, this is linked in. So let's do something about that. Prions are otherworldly disease agents. Now, where and what are we talking about? Could even modern science get a little fruity and flaky? What are prions? When was the last time your medical doctor, infectious disease or otherwise at Kaiser, told you you're suffering from prion infection? In science, we are finding out unanimously across the board that it's not just virus, bacteria, and parasite. There are things that are smaller. Unlike bacteria, fungi, or virus, they have no DNA and RNA and produce slow, insidious infections. Now we go sci-fi on it, like Kurt Vonnegut's Ice Nine. They destroy by acting as templates for the reassembly of proteins surrounding them. The discoverer of prions, Stanley Prusner, and others have pointed out similarities between Alzheimer's and known prion diseases such as Scrapie, Jacob Creutzfeldt, and Kuru. What's that? I'll tell you what it is. It's just another boogeyman that nature put safeguards in to vanquish back to the hell it came from. And you're not allowed to say that at Kaiser among your fellow medical doctors. That's considered fruitcake. And yet that's the truth. Can you get that? I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health, straighttalk.cc, 714-850-1007. If you need to get put on the right track, give us a call, make an appointment, get yourself straightened out. I need two good people for tomorrow's class, 714-850-1007. We're going to get into the teeth. Everything you want to know about the teeth. We're going to go 6 to 7 straight hours. We'll take a 1 hour break and we'll talk teeth. Within the next month, I'm going to have Dr. Randolph Aguilera on the show for a series of programs about the teeth, hard hitting questions that my colleague has to answer about the teeth and what better dental care represents, better dental hygiene, and how to make sure you end up at 75 years old with a full bunch of teeth, healthy, non-infected, non-decayed, non-metallic teeth in your mouth. But the ins and outs of it, that's why you have to listen to the show. And I'll do a series of those. The most popular mechanisms advanced is the cause of Alzheimer's disease. Prions, loss of neurons and acetylcholine. Neurotoxicity, aluminum. Oh, yes, that aluminum. Now, aluminum's a metal. But mercury's a metal, but cadmium's a metal, but lead is a metal, but strontium-90 is a radioactive metal. But calcium and magnesium and potassium are metals. I'm so confused about all these metals. Take all of these metals out. You see? Is it the metal? Is it the prions? Is it all of them? Is it none of them? Is it both of them? And this is what you call the Kool-Aid. Long before we have to worry about these things, your cells are breaking down. That's the first part of the show. You can understand Alzheimer's is aluminum toxicity. And then every time you wrap your food in aluminum foil, worry that the aluminum's getting into your meat and that's going into your brain, or you haven't purified your water or the rest of it. Or is it monosodium glutamate? Is it aspartame? Is it the millions and trillions and gazillions of chemicals taken in each day? Or is it prions? Or is it you're just genetically disposed to run out of the neurotransmitter acetylcholine? What's your profile? And how come when you get it, nobody discusses this with you? If this is true, and it must be because studies show, then why doesn't your doctor at Kaiser talk to you about it and what you want to do about it? First of all, most doctors figure by the time, if they even believed in this, that you get to the point where you're symptomatic, there's nothing you can do because it's irreversible. Unlike the article that I showed you, there's another mistake they make. Mr. Smith, you're 60, you're showing signs. Yes, there's some plaques on the brain. This is pre-Alzheimer's. Don't worry about your diet. Don't exercise. Don't get your head put on straight. Don't radically change your diet. Don't do your oxidative profiles. Simply, we'll just manage it. Boy, Are we checking out? Hey, look, what do you want? You're over the age of 75. People back at the 1900s, they only lived to 50. What are you asking for more for? Amyloid buildup, beta amyloid buildup. There's another cause. As noted earlier, the presence of plaques, amyloid, normal protein abnormally processed in some neurons, and that the toxic insoluble beta amyloid is formed and deposited. That's what those white things were on that picture there, picture number 12. Sets in motion a cascade. That cascade is that other level. Remember, I said all the little fires coalesce into one big bonfire? That cascade is what I'm talking about. Something else happens once it gets really going. Tau hyperphosphorylation. Try that one on for size. Genetic markers. Always going to come down to the genes. You have to understand that the catch term now, you saw it with Angelina's breasts. Angelina Jolie's breasts. She was genetically predisposed to breast to ovarian cancer, so she cut her breasts because the ovarian cancer could potentially have something to do with her estrogen, or the breast cancer could have something to do with the estrogen. Her mom got ovarian cancer. They told her she had that same tendency, so she took the breasts. And if she did it, so should you. And now, I saw it last week. I see it every week. Doctors are saying, look, this lump in the breast here, this isn't quite cancer, but you've got that gene. Don't you think you might want to slice them off right now? And gee, you're not going to have kids. You're 50. Why don't we take your ovaries too? We'll just give you estrogen or progesterone. It's the same thing. This is what's going down everywhere. Because genetic engineering is here, genetic testing is here, and you're going to find, every time we study these, you're going to find money put into fixing these things from the standpoint of eradicating, eliminating, altering your genetic predisposition. And all these other focuses on these other potential mechanisms are going to go out the window. You are truly being fed a misconception about how you're supposed to look at chronic illness. And there's the genetic marker once again. Now, what's my point? What do you do if you understand the issue? Number one, here's number 10, picture number 10, Geneva Diagnostics. Go get an oxidative stress test, a way to measure glutathione reductase in the RBCs, the red blood cells of your blood. Ask your healthcare practitioner, ask your medical doctor, ask your hematologist, ask your diabetologist, ask anybody you want. Or go to these places yourself and get the test done straight. There are labs throughout the United States. You do your work. You do your work. You get on Google, you look it up. Geneva Diagnostics is one of many companies that'll do this kind of thing. And if it's too complicated, go pay somebody to do it. So every single year, every single 2 years after the age of 60, after the age of 50, you have the amount of oxidative stress measured by assaying glutathione reductase in the red blood cell. And then you compare 1 year to the next year to the next year. Do that. It's cheap. It's inexpensive. Don't say you don't have the money. You have the money. What you spend on popcorn in restaurants, what you spend on vacations, what you spend on your car, you just don't see the importance of it. This is important to develop an oxidative profile. Go to your doctor, your healthcare practitioner, your nutritionist, your acupuncturist, your chiropractor, your naturopath, your osteopath, your medical doctor in whatever specialty he's in, and say, I want to get an oxidative. And when they say, what does that have to do with senility, with Alzheimer's, tell them to listen to this show and get an education. Or start thinking, because if they ask you that, they forgot. Hey, all you can do is listen to Dr. Oz. Listen to Dr. Oz. Listen to the guy that just wrote Grain Brain. Go get the book, Grain Brain. It's out there. The smart money is on understanding this. The really smart money is on really understanding this. The best money you can spend is starting to develop a sense of your oxidative profile. Here's a lab. You do the rest. This is science. This will be the science of tomorrow, but not for uneducated, uninformed, low-information advocates. The low-information people are going to get slaughtered politically, journalistically, and medically. This is not America 1950. This is America 2000. It's not like it was, and we all know it in our hearts deep down inside. You got to dig harder. This is the portal. This is why learning the internet becomes so important. So get your oxidative stress tests now. Consider your oils. Consider your structure. Consider your antioxidants. Consider keeping your blood sugar low. I put an article, time unpermitting. You're going to have to check the full article on Alzheimer's and type 2 diabetes at the top. The higher the blood sugar, the higher the insulin, the faster you develop pre-Alzheimer's and then Alzheimer-like conditions. Keep the blood sugar low. Alzheimer's the sixth leading cause of death in the United States. That's what they're telling us now. Tomorrow I'm going to show my class what it feels like to bend the spine and pump the ventricular system of the brain. Yeah, real complicated. No. The essences of Tai Chi, Qigong, Yoga, Kung Fu, Pilates, and every other blessed physical therapy known to man from the beginning of time are to get people to clean their brain. Don't be a grain brain and learn to clean your brain. Take that and oxidative stress tests to your future, and you won't end up sick. 714-850-1007. I need two dedicated students. If not, don't call. See you guys later. Ta-ta.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.